Good morning, everybody. This is the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Well, we started the state fair yesterday, and I'm sure that's going to be popular this weekend because it's going to be 100 degrees, and it always seems to be 100 degrees when the fair starts, but we'll see how it goes out there. You know, with all this hot weather, it sure sounds good to go down to the coast and maybe do some rock fishing or salmon fishing. But even up in the mountains, like you go over to the hill to Markleyville, and either you're going to get warm temperatures or some thunderstorms. So you just never know. Most of the thunderstorms have been south. I know one, I tried to get a hold of the people at Markleyville yesterday, but every time I tried to call a number, the phone acted funny, so I know they had phone problems over there. But, you know, if you're worried about further east and south, I checked with Tim Fesco of Meadowcliff Lodge and RV, and he's a fisherman. He's been driving up and down the river, and they have had zero effects from thunderstorms up there. Sometimes the thunderstorms will blow the river out for a day or two, but not on the West Walker, you know, where they're how big is Big Fishing Derby is going on. We'll talk about that later. And some very nice fish being taken there, as you will hear. But, you know, up in the northern mountains, now, you know, think of this, if you want to get out of the heat, you know, it's going to be on an average of 2 to 3 degrees cooler temperatures for every 1,000 feet. So if you go up to Lake Tahoe, theoretically, that's going to be 12 to 18 degrees cooler. But, you know, these little microclimates, it's going to float around. So if you want to get really cool, would you go to 6,000 feet if it's going to be 103? Well, it's still going to be 90, you know, or 89. So you go up maybe 7, 8,000 feet, like Capel's Lake is just under 8,000 feet. That's usually a place you can really enjoy the weather because it's really nice there when it's hot here in the valley. And further south, you know, you go up on Ebbets Pass, up at Lake Alpine is 7,000 feet, but it's a different type of 7,000 feet, and it's kind of cool there too. And then you get past that and into Hermit Valley and things, and it gets warm in some of those valleys, but then you go up to Ebbets Pass itself, and my goodness, it's doggone near cold, which sounds good about 3 p.m, doesn't it? But further north, like the Gull Lake area, that's between 5 and 6,000 feet, although it seems like you're just as high up in the mountains. You're just not. That's not the highest portion of the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's still better than being in a valley, but just because you're in the mountains doesn't mean you're going to be that cool. It has everything to do with how high you go up into the mountains. So keeping that in mind, we will have reports today along the coast from San Francisco and Bodega Bay. We'll get a report on Bodega Bay at 6:45 this morning. I've heard from a couple of people over there. One person, a friend fished yesterday. It was pretty slow yesterday. The water conditions were good. They were happy. The sea set down a little bit, but there just didn't seem to be a lot of fish around. So, yeah, that can happen. You know, it's not San Francisco. San Francisco, there just seems to be tons of fish around, but even that showed signs of slowing down. You know, when things start changing, like early in the week, they had big numbers of fish, but not many big fish. And then later in the week, the numbers fell off, but the bigger fish came in. So when you start to see changes like that, it's kind of the beginning of something. Well, this coming Monday is the opening of the salmon season of Sacramento and American and Feather Rivers. And so, you know, there's going to be fish in the river. And we'll talk about that later, but the fish in your river, you've got to remember, the river's going to be warm. Now, we've got one thing going for us. Just recently, the Feather River has been releasing up between 6 and 8,000 cubic feet of water. That's going to cool it down. Yesterday in the Sacramento River down through town and below town, a lot of debris in the water, a lot of debris. That means the river came up somewhere, probably the Feather, and dumped a bunch of stuff in there. That should be gone by Monday. But here again, the American River, which usually limps along at about 1,500 cubic feet per second, is at 5,000. So that's a lot more water than we're used to having. And it's not that we need more water to fish for the salmon, but it adds to the coolness of the water. And as we talk about every year, when it comes to salmon, every single degree counts. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, we'll get a report from Bodega Bay. Of course, Barry will be with us in a few minutes to update us on salmon up at Fort Bragg. I heard they had a pretty good day yesterday, but Barry might have been out albacore fishing. I'm not sure. We'll find out in just a few minutes. And then I get a report on Eureka. And you know when you call your contacts up in Eureka and they want to talk about how great the Pacific halibut fishing is, the salmon fishing probably isn't very good. So there you have that. We'll get reports on Shasta Lake for some rainbows and Whiskey Town for some kokanee, some pretty nice sized kokanee. You know, it still is producing, I would say, probably on the average, the best average size kokanee. But we'll also get a report on Stampede. And Stampede is cooking along. Things change there a little bit. The fish get tired of being pressured, but you can do some things about that, okay? We'll cover some of the northern streams, that's Sacramento River by Dunsmuir, the McLeod River, the Fall River, the Hat Creek, things like that. There's a big kind of a algae bloom on the Trinity River. It's hard to say where it's coming from, but the upper Trinity is getting an awful lot of moss in it, almost making it unfishable for the trout fishermen, and, you know, up by Lewiston. And the only thing some of the locals can figure out is probably, you know, people out there growing marijuana and all the fertilizer that they dump in. When the fertilizer gets in the river, everything grows. And it doesn't take much, let me tell you, with these warmer temperatures. So who knows what's happening there. We'll keep an eye on that. Richie Hite of Paulina Peak Tackle fish Flaming Gorge Reservoir. You're going to want to hear that, because kokanee fishing like you've never heard of before is what you're going to hear. Davis Lake, kind of slow, but Ed Dillard went over to Frenchman's Reservoir and really spanked some trout up to 19 inches. We'll get a report from Val Aubrey up at Eagle Lake, how even the lake is warmed up, but they're catching fish, not like it was 2 or 3 years ago, but not bad either. And then we'll get that complete report on the West Walker River. That's really going good. Rob Reimers fished Bullard's Bar earlier this week for kokanee. We'll get a report there, as well as the Orville salmon. Clyde, the old-timer, you're not going to believe what's going on down on the San Joaquin River with big stripers. He's coming up just after the break at 6:30. Gary Coe, who's fishing a kokanee powdery derby on Party Reservoir today, will try to call us at 7:45 and get updated there. All that coming up in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes on the KFBK Outdoors Show. Thanks for being here. Well, talking to Barry, his plans were to try to get in an albacore trip today. But, you know, you never know with the weather at Fort Bragg. You know the fish are out there about 30 to 35 miles. At least they were the last couple of days. But let's find out now if they got to them. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, it doesn't sound like you're...
We're on our way here.
Oh, you are? Good.
We're just running just a little bit late, so that made it a little bit better for this.
Yeah. So,
the pretty good day yesterday, 35 to 37 miles. Boats were anywhere from 6 to 25 fish. And mixed grade, nothing great. But under some pretty good weather. And it looks pretty good again today. Then it starts coming up. So, as always, tuna is going to be a weather thing.
Always is, huh?
Weather's there. You're in good shape, but other than that, you know, the inside's going to be okay for this next week, but the outside won't be.
So. Okay. So how far are you going to go out today, Barry? Like 35?
Well, we're set at 37 on the GPS right now. So
okay.
We're looking for the water breaks, and there's quite a few boats going. So there was, I think, 4 or 5 yesterday, and probably the same, if not more, today. So maybe somebody will find them closer. Maybe we will.
Now, how are you going to fish for them?
Oh, we're trolling. We're trolling 9 rods. We're using feathers and stuff, you know.
Just like you would would in Mexico, right?
Yeah, 6-7 miles an hour, you know, bouncing them on top. So
now, of course, if bait was available, you'd troll till you found fish and then drop bait on them?
Well, we don't really have to do that if they'll come up, but that doesn't happen very often, you know, around here. It happened a few years ago, but yeah, if it does, we've got rods all set up with swim baits and P-line laser minnows on them.
Sure.
And there's just you have to get your own bait up here. You know, use bag bait and chum it up. You know. But if we can get them to come up, then it's a field day then.
Yeah. Just never know. Never know. So you say there's nothing to brag about quality. What are we talking about, 10 or 12 pounds?
Up to 20. I think the biggest one I saw yesterday was about 25 pounds.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, good. We got 5 people, and so we try to get, you know, a minimum of 3 fish a person. Our average load is about 25 coming back, you know.
Uh-huh.
And what we usually do is that we know where we're at, how long it's going to take us, and we start, Jeff starts cleaning, and we still troll, and usually end up with many times we've had a triple on when we've got fish all over the deck.
Of course.
But we try to get most of the fish all quartered and bagged before we get back in. Now it's a long day because by the time you get back in, and you know, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, you know, with all the different regulations, I'm surprised that the regulations allow you to do that anymore.
Oh, with albacore, yeah. Only limit's 25. You don't see a person who's going to reach that.
Yeah. But listen, you can't, if you have rockfish, if you clean them out there, you have to leave a fillet attached to the rockfish, don't you?
Right. Yeah.
And salmon the same?
Salmon, you don't clean out. So you gut them, but you're not going to fillet them outside.
Okay.
They got to be.
Okay.
So this week, though, it was up and down on the salmon, you know, anywhere from a couple of fish a boat to, you know, some guys with only 2 people might get limits and stuff. But, you know, yesterday was mixed. Some did pretty good. Some didn't. The day before was kind of slow. And we did rock cod yesterday. We had limits of rock cod. We didn't have but 1 short ling, no lings yesterday. Where last week we had limits of lings. Last Saturday we went up to Westport and we salmon fished up there and got 1 salmon. And then we were 4 shy of limits of rock cod. But we had limits of ling cod, and it got up to about 12 pounds.
Okay. There's always that, isn't there?
Yeah, that was a pretty good day. We earned that day. I mean, coming back, it was a pretty rough ride. But it was nice up there. You know how that bay up there is, and it kind of shelters it a little bit. So yesterday we went south. We were down at Mendocino, and we got them pretty fast yesterday.
Okay. Well, at least you're catching some salmon, Barry.
Yeah. So I don't think we'll be doing another tuna trip until the soonest would be next weekend. I'm watching. We use the Windy app, and we can get out there until a few days and see. And it's been pretty accurate, so.
Okay. You have a chance to catch Albert Core all summer long off Fort Bragg if you can get to them, and the only thing that varies then is the distance they're out.
The distance, and you know, they're an eating machine, so you know they gain weight a lot. So the later in the season, they get a little bit bigger too.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it ended up, we were at like 15, 17 miles, stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty close.
So, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about anywhere else. I just keep track of Fort Bragg here. I haven't heard anything down below. Last year was the only place it happened was Fort Bragg, and besides the Oregon, of course.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and we got a pretty good shot of water, and it's all connected, so we'll see. The
well,
more boats go out, then the more you'll be able to find some, you know, some guys will stop short.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the temperature break is what you're looking for. You know.
Sure.
Water to 61 yesterday, so.
You know who's really keeping an eye on your salmon fishing are all the people up at Eureka who are just dying. They can't figure out what's going on. And those were the ones where I heard that they were catching fish at Fort Bragg. So they're looking south for those Klamath River fish. It's not working out up there like the projections dictated it would.
No, I mean, does it ever? I don't know. I mean, look at San Francisco. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know.
Just
and,
crazy.
You know, I hear people at Half-Moon Bay say, well, it's because the coastside is planting all those fish down on the Half-Moon Bay side, and that's why.
Well, I don't think you can point to any one thing, but I will tell you this. I think that helps, you know, when they,
oh, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Every time
that's
they.
The reason San Francisco could be so good.
Yeah, every time they plant those fish in Half Moon Bay and down in Santa Cruz right there in the San Lorenzo River and that little, you know, those fish aren't going to spawn. They're out there to be caught, grown, and caught by ocean fishermen, both commercial and sport fishermen. That's great. And then you have Mike McHenry who brings his boat up to McCallamy with the aerators and takes a big load of McCallamy River salmon down. That's got to really help. All these grassroots things, they're trying different things, they all help, and it's something the Department of Fish and Wildlife should have been doing all these years, but of course they don't. But the fact is there's a lot of those efforts, and we're seeing the results of it.
Yeah, well, whatever they can do, you know, I mean, it's, they put so many restrictions on us the last few years that,
yeah,
you know, maybe the next few years will pay off.
Yep, hope so. Barry, if you get any fish before the end of the program, give us a call back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll be getting out of the distance here. I'm hoping that it's pretty flat, we'll be able to run, you know.
Okay.
Some speed. Okay, but I will definitely send you a message or something that you have an idea what's going on.
Good deal. Good luck out there.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Barry Canavero, fish hooker, sport fishing on his way out, albacore fishing, going to go out about 35 to 37 miles, you know, all the apps you can get showing where the temperature changes are. That's where your albacore will be. So if you want to book a trip for everything you talked about, the albacore, the salmon, the rockfish, lingcod, give them a call at 916-870-4225. That's quite a phenomenon, those albacore. I mean, people wait for that every year, and a lot of people wait for years to get out because at the last minute, the wind comes up, you cancel trips. You don't want to fool with the ocean, especially when you're 35 to 50 miles out in it. Something comes up, you just don't scoot back to port. Anyway, after the break, we will check with some Bay Area fishing, all of which is very impressive. Don't go away. Welcome back. You know, we have been experiencing very close to us one of those years that we wish would happen every year where we have periods of, quite frankly, great fishing down either in San Francisco Bay for halibut or striped bass or just outside for the rockfish, lingcod, and especially this year, salmon. Now, last year, if you recall, I mean, the projection was for a not-so-great run, and it ended up being, well, not a not-so-great run, only because, you know, like up the Sacramento River, at least past the American and Feathers, there weren't a lot of three-year-old fish, and that was a concern. But there was a lot of other fish. Now, the American and Feather and McCallamy seem to have more three-year-old fish than the Sacramento River did, you know, by Red Bluff. And that was a concern because the guides would go out and they'd get some nice fish, 6 pounds, 7 pounds, 8 pounds, but you didn't see the boats. You know, the average fish in an average year up there runs 15 to 20 pounds. That's your average 3-year-old salmon. That did not happen last year. Of course, there was some. Now, there was a lot of jack salmon. Well, jack salmon is one of the indicators for the following season's run because a lot of jacks come up, and even though once they enter freshwater, they start the process of dying, and they do die without ever spawning. The majority of jacks are still in the ocean feeding and growing and come up as 3-year-olds. Well, a whole bunch of them came up last year, but if that's an indication of the number of 3-year-olds, then we're in good shape. And that seems to be what's going on in the ocean. So we're pretty lucky there. I mean, we're really lucky. Anyway, if you're a party boat fisherman or a six-packer, you're in hog heaven. I talked to Andy Giuliano of Fish Emeryville about all the boats out of Emeryville and what they did this week. Okay. It doesn't want to do anything. Oh, that's just lovely. Okay, I have nothing. Well, it will not fire, as we say in the business. The pot's up. The whole works. Okay. Sorry about that. This could be a long show, huh? Let me try to explain what happened down in Emeryville. Okay. First of all, the tides increased a little bit. So the halibut fishing, which had been, let's see if we got it now. No? We do not have it. Anyway, the tides increased, which means the halibut fell off a little bit because the week before, the tides were great. And let me tell you, it was some of the best halibut scores of the season. If you recall, there was like many boats with 2 halibut average. I mean, that's almost unheard of. That's a lot of good-eating fish right there. Well, this, with the increased tides, the striper fishing picked up. The stripers are on at least a few of the rock piles, like Shag Rock and Harding Rock, just kind of northwest of Alcatraz. They had good drifts. Both sides of Alcatraz this week, too, picking up stripers and halibut. And one thing about when you're fishing the rock piles in the bay, you get a certain tide, you might get some rock fish and even some lingcod, even though it's not outside the Golden Gate. Of course, those fish move in there, but they get pounded pretty good. Anyway, the boats outside the gate went out and easy limits of rockfish and lingcod out at the Farallones. But there's not many people going out because the potluck trips in the bay and the salmon fishermen are taking all the business. So you want to go out for a rockfish fishing. I'll tell you one thing. Now's the time to go. It's not going to be too crowded out there with a bunch of boats. Let's try it again. No. The salmon fishing, what happened during the early part of the week is we had a lot of fish, but we didn't have many big fish. I mean, just everybody got, it's been a pattern of early limits. I mean, the boats are heading back at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and that kind of continued for a lot of boats in the various places. A lot of boats are heading north now as opposed to heading south. They're finding fish out there. They're finding fish along the coast up to Duxbury. I haven't heard of too much past Duxbury because, quite frankly, there's no reason to go past Duxbury. Now, up there is a place called Double Point, but we were going up there last year because we had to find fish, but this year they're all, the amount of fish taken out of Muir Beach, which is right around the corner from the Golden Gate, is just astounding this year. And so, when that happens, you can see why they get a good jump on getting back in. They're still catching some. There's always boats that are going to fish the channel buoys. You know, they might be out at number six buoy, but usually they're out right near the end of the channel buoys, number one and two buoys, and that's where they've been. You know, of course, they started the season even past that, out in the westbound lane of the ship channel. It goes south of the Farallones. Then there's been some other fish up by N buoy, which is offshore a little bit out between Muir Beach and Duxbury. So there's fish around, and of course they were catching fish south, so there's plenty of salmon. Then later in the week, what happens is, well, the scores fell off as far as numbers. In other words, not every boat limited, and that's really the first time in a couple of weeks we've heard that, but the fish were bigger. And you know, now we're getting, you know, if you want to speak in terms of averages, the early of the week, fish were you know, like 7 to say 9 and 10 pounds, and then later in the week they're like 10 to 14 pounds. Now when the average goes up like that, you're going to get a lot of fish in the upper teens and 20 pound range. So that's all well and good. I mean, that works just fine. So whatever you want to go with it, you check your tides, and you know, you can find all kinds of tide tables on the internet. You can pick them up at bait shops. They're easy to compute, and the bigger the tides, you know, usually you look at the minus tide, the bigger the tides, the halibut fishing traditionally isn't going to be that good, although you can still catch them at the turn of the tide. But when that current really gets moving, then you're not going to catch the halibut. That's when you catch the stripers. They get in these schools, they get very aggressive, and so that's the difference. You know, one week it's halibut, one week it's stripers, but you can always count on a few stripers. So that's what's going on down in the bay. And the ocean in San Francisco has just been the center of attention for all the salmon. You know, I'm hearing mixed reports at a Bodega Bay. If you were with us just a while ago, you heard Barry. Yeah, they're catching a few fish. An occasional a private skiff will get limits for a couple people. That's two fish apiece. It's just one of those things, you know. And up at Eureka, as you'll hear before the program's over, or at least you may not hear it from them, but you'll hear it from me about what's happened to the salmon fishing up there and why everybody is just scratching their heads. Anyway, to book a trip, you know, I had Andy Giuliano doing that interview explaining all that. His number to book a trip, what, you know, they've got regular party boats. They've got the potluck boats in the bay. They've got the rockfish boats. They've got the salmon boats. They've got the party boats, six-packers and four-packers. Here's the number, area code 510-652-3403. And then call the hotline late in the afternoon to see what they did that day, area code 510-652-3474. We'll be back, hopefully, with Mr. Dan Bacher, the fish sniffer, right after this. Welcome back. Welcome back. Well, there was pretty interesting stuff earlier this week where, for once, the water board in California kind of decided that enough is enough. The State Water Resources Control Board, all the staff members are appointed by Brown, said if we don't do something about the Delta, the ecosystem's going to collapse. Fish are going to go extinct, blah, 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 blah. Of course, we've been saying that for years. I'm sure Mr. Dan Bacher is going to have some comment on that. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Well, I'm glad that they did that, yeah. And that was mainly over the San Joaquin River and its tributaries.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that the same board is continuing to hold the hearings on the petition to build the Delta tunnels to change the point of diversions on the Sacramento River to the intakes that they plan in the North Delta. So, I mean, this is a good development, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays into the hearings over the Delta tunnels, because those will resume this Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So, It's a good move, but we'll see, because Brown is just dead set on pushing this thing through before he leaves office. At least having the framework in to do it, and this is going to be an impediment. So, you know, I don't know how they're going to get the tunnels through with this decision, but I think that Brown will probably find a way to do it somehow.
Yeah. Well, you know, as usual, the people that represent the farmers, you know, the water districts and all this, are very single-minded about this. And, of course, they all are single-minded. They all think that this water was created for them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at an article, and the big critics immediately pounced on the plan, saying it will take some of the nation's most fertile farmland out of production and harm the Central Valley economy. Well, you know what I say? So what? You got plenty of farmland in production. And, you know, just what we need is another crop of almonds that we can export, use our water to export the almonds, you know, that kind of stuff. And then they say, oh, they're going to, you know, we could lose up to 1,300 jobs. Well, if they say 1,300, it's probably more like 300.
Yeah,
and if you'll recall, during the drought, while they're doing the same kind of crying and moaning and not looking objectively at the whole thing, they had predicted a devastating economy in the Delta, and farm employment actually increased.
Right, so they increased dramatically by acreage, at least around 50,000 acreage every year, and some years 150,000, I think it was, the almond acreage.
Well, this year 70,000 more acres were planted in almonds than last year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the way it's every year. It's been more grown, and it's a water intensive crop. And the further you go south in the valley, the less sense it makes to grow that crop.
So
you need more water per acre.
Money in your pocket. But here's the thing: when we talked about this, well, Governor Brown is strapping us with 25 to 35% water restrictions.
Yeah.
Farmers are out planting almond trees.
I know.
What a slap in the face that was. And he doesn't say anything about that. I mean, there's no conscious effort to conserve water when you're planting almonds.
Right.
So
another thing I'd like to talk about is the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California's Board of Directors had a revote that was forced by illegal communications that were done between the board outside of the meetings in violation of the Brown Act. And they had this revote, and as expected, they voted to finance $10.8 billion of the $17 billion Delta Tunnels project. And the vote was 59.5% yes and 39.17% no. It's a weird voting, but they give each person gets a percentage of the vote, or which area gets a percentage of the vote. But you know, the yes vote was no surprise, because Brown really had these board members under intense pressure. But the big thing that I took away from watching the meeting online was that the board approved the funding despite the opposition of every single individual water ratepayer that spoke during the public comment period. Not one actual customer of the water district, of any of the agencies of the district, spoke in favor.
Yeah.
The only people that spoke in favor were hired political hacks. Yeah.
Well,
or
here's
water
the deal.
Agency
that
lobbying.
Just shows you that every water agency that voted for it is not representing their constituents.
Right.
They are not representing what the people want.
And as one, the representative of the Sierra Club California, Charming Evelyn, who's a local water ratepayers. He says, why is money going to the Delta tunnels and not local cleanup and creation of new green jobs?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So
interesting, Dan. You know what bothers me, when after the Water Board came out with this proposal to put more emphasis on the fish and the habitat, they still have several weeks to get bombarded by political pressure before they come up with a final.
Yep. This is subject to a public comment period right now.
Dan, thank you. We'll find out.
Okay, thank you.
Dan Bacher, the fish sniffer. After the break, salmon at Oroville and Bullard's Bar.